yourself a song to sing, and sing it till you're done. Yeah, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber barons straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found, whose crimes have gone unpunished now, walk the streets a screaming now. Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, today the theme is Taming Trump. What's going on in Washington? Well, a big battle behind the scenes between the radical supporters of Donald Trump, who put him in office, and the Republican establishment that fought him and now is coming to terms with him, or correctly, making him come to terms with them. He says, oh, they love me now. Well, it's a love-hate thing. You know, if you still watch what's going on in some of the talk shows and so forth, you know, Charlie Rose and some of these other shows, Bloomberg News and so forth, they get these spokespersons on who are sort of speaking to the rest of the establishment. You know, what are we thinking now? This is their information conduit, or one of them. And some of them are still pretty rabid anti-Trump, you know. Well, this is all part of keeping the pressure on him. You know, they're going to tame him. They're going to bring him around and force him as much as possible to be a traditional Republican candidate. Well, he's already opened up the suggestion he would and will. And you can see it most closely on the tax proposals. You know, he and Paul Ryan, that ultra-conservative, who is more dangerous in some ways than Trump, economically at least, are pretty much in lockstep on what they're going to do on taxes. You know, beginning of the year, Trump proposed an election, $10 trillion in tax cuts, most of it, of course, going to the wealthy. Investors, bankers, shadow bankers, big corporations, and so forth, and they're going to really deliver on that. That's going to fly through. They've been waiting for two years or more, as I've been saying. I predicted after the last midterms there would be a big corporate tax cut push that didn't prevail, of course. But we'll see it now, no doubt. And as I said last week, I talked a bit about the whole U.S. tax issue. You know, how George W. Bush passed in his first term about $3.7 trillion in tax cuts, 80% of which went to investors and bankers. And how, when Obama came into office, $300 billion immediately more in his initial recovery program, another $800 billion at the end of 2010, and then another $4 trillion, $5 trillion rather, expanding or allowing the Bush tax cuts for another 10 years. Well, that's not enough. You know, the greedy SOBs, they want more. You know, and at the heart of this, I said, was this phony profits repatriation program. I'm not going to go over that again, but basically that was done during Bush in 2005, and they're going to do it again. Give the big multinationals like Apple with $237 billion in cash offshore to bring it back at a 10% rate. And then they apply, once they pay the 10% rate, then they apply all their loopholes. So, you know, they'll bring that money back, and they'll pay maybe 2, 3%. And don't believe what you hear about tax rates and effective tax rate. You know, the nominal tax rate is 35% for corporations, but the effective tax rate is 12.2% for the large corporations. And they're going to reduce that to, well, they say 15 to 20%. You know, so they're going to get a whopping 15 to 20%, 25% tax cuts ASAP. Yeah. Wow, what a handout that's going to be. As if you know, the trillions and trillions of dollars they've made and passed on in the form of $5 trillion to investors and as dividends and corporate buybacks, as if that wasn't enough. You know, now it's going to, well, no wonder the stock market loves this. Well, stock market is booming. You know, there's no fundamental basis for this boom. It's just expectation of windfalls coming in the tax bill. That's what's going on here with the stock market, right? And meanwhile, the bond market, which moves in the opposite direction, is experiencing its worst, at least the government bond market, its worst period in, decades maybe. It could be a bond market bubble bust. And I've been warning of that. You know, bond markets are far more important than stock markets. And if they implode, it's going to make 2008-09 look like a high school dress rehearsal. Anyway, we talked about that last week. We didn't really get into the trade thing. We didn't have enough time, so let me just sort of add this addendum to last week's show and make a few comments on trade. And then I want to get into this taming Trump and what's going on, you know, how the ruling established elites, Republican and Democrats with them, are taming him already and going to continue taming. And taming means getting him to do their traditional policies. Well, how can he do that when he's already promised to do something else? Well, easy, because they do whatever they need to do to get in the office, and American people fall for their lies. You can't trust any of those two parties, anything of what they say. They just say what they think you want to hear, and then they get in and they do what the hell they want. And that's going to be true with Trump. You watch. Oh, but he has to placate his radical wing, and he'll do that too. You know? The best way to understand the whole Trump election phenomenon, I think, is to understand false populism. You know, the ruling elites have figured out how to manipulate populism to stay in power. Kind of a contradiction in terms, isn't it, right? Populism is supposed to throw these guys out. Well, they figured out how to dominate it and control it and run it. Well, that's exactly what Obama did in 2008. Left populism. And then, of course, he didn't deliver it. Zilch. I'll be writing an article later in December, and it'll be up on my website, jackrasmus.com, about the legacy of Obama. You know, what is his economic legacies? It's not pretty. Okay. Getting back to the trade thing, right? What are we going to see with trade with Trump? You know, he comes out, he's opposed to free trade, right? He's opposed to all these jobs going offshore. Legitimate fact. And, he says he won't sign the TPP. Well, the TPP is dead anyway, right? Unless the Republicans try to erect it, you know, resurrect it, and they will. But they're not going to do that right away, you see. That's a longer term. They got to get their ducks in line how exactly to do that. They're not going to take on that big issue and from the get-go. What you're going to see is more publicity statements, some of them staged, I think, by Trump, in which he's going to say, oh, Ford Motor, you're planning to move to Mexico. You know, your Lincoln division here, better not. And Ford says, okay, you know, because Ford wants the tax cuts. They're going to play ball. United Technologies carrier division there in Indiana, planning to move to Mexico, and now Trump's putting pressure on them. You know, these are very visible things where he can look to his base as if he's doing something while they put off and delay the more fundamental change in the trade policies. You know, he's not going to slap 45% tariffs on Chinese or anybody and start a trade war with the Chinese. No way. U.S. corporations have too much at stake with the Chinese trade. Too much. You know, an interesting example is you go back to 2000 when George Bush came in office. I don't know if folks remember this, but there was this big hullabaloo over a U.S. spy plane was forced to land in China, one of the islands there, Hainan or something, and, you know, the neocons were pumping up the war, beating war drums with China and so forth, and you could see it in the press, it was coming. But then all of a sudden, big multinational corporations started visiting the White House and George Bush, and one after the other, and George Bush just quietly reversed himself and his whole administration on beating the war drums with China. There's too much money to be made there. And big corporations had him cool it. Hmm? Well, the same thing's going to happen with, China. The U.S. And Chinese economic bigwigs meet every year in Beijing and plot out where they're going, both of them, next. So there's a very tight cooperation going on there, and Trump isn't going to reverse that. He's not going to take on a difficult issue fundamentally, and certainly not take on the Republican establishment, because that's a priority. That, trade and tax cuts are the what they really want, the Republican corporate elite. And they're going to make sure they get it, and they will tame him. And this faux progressivism that was Obama, what we got with Trump is a mirror image, a faux right-wing populism. Populism, I shouldn't say progressivism, because it wasn't progressive under Obama. It was populist, right? And we're seeing the same thing, a mirror image. You know, the elites have figured out how to manipulate the populist equation on the left under Obama and now on the right. You know, even they continued, the Democrats continued with Sanders. That was all part of that tradition over the Obama period from 2008 to 16, how they keep the left movements under control and dominate them. Well, Sanders, big independent, he's running, right, as an independent. Ha! He was never an independent. Look at him. He's standing right there with Schumer and the others as they're talking about, how to take over the Democratic Party. What a pipe dream. Take over the Democratic Party from the DLC, corporate wing of that party, never happened. You know, but yet they're going through that, and they want everyone to think that that's the way to solve the future issues. I mean, the Democrats are in deep trouble long term, I think. You know, as I said last week, what did they do? They've lost 2/3 of the governorships and 2/3 of the state houses, and probably even a greater percentage of the judicial appointments, if you had counted them up at the state level. They're no longer a national party. They're just a two-coast party. Well, not even a coast, because the East Coast, they're not. You know, I mean, just Upper East Coast, New York City to Washington, New York, Boston. You know, that's it. They no longer even have the Midwest. You know, they had a block of Midwest votes there from Pennsylvania to Wisconsin. Of course, we know what happened there. That's gone. Because they allowed their base to go. They sold out the working class in the Midwest to the corporate free traders. That's what they did. Cut their own throat. And now they're a two-coast party. Well, okay. What we're going to do in the future shows here, talk about that, as well as at the end of the show, I'll talk about what's coming on Alternative Visions. You know, but one of them is going to be an analysis of the Democratic Party's implosion. Right? And another will be the political instability that's coming big time in Europe. And we're only seeing the very beginning of that. We're also going to look at, once it becomes clearer, what is this thing called infrastructure spending that Trump has proposed. He's rolling a lot of dice on that. You know, when he doesn't move quickly on free trade and does these token publicity stunts here, you know, with, like Ford Carrier, to make it look like he's doing something. You know, he doesn't move quickly on free trade. Rollback in his campaign is associated with creating jobs, right? So if he doesn't move quickly on free trade, he's going to have to do something nonetheless to create jobs. And that's his infrastructure program. But once it becomes clear, we'll look at it, whether that infrastructure program is really going to create very many jobs. And quickly, you see, because you got 6 months of legislative lag here, right? And then you got an implementation lag before it actually hits the economy, right? So he's got to do something with that in the first 6 months in order to have it start having an effect in 2018 for the midterm elections at the end of 2018. That will be a real test, you see. So anyway, we'll take a look at the infrastructure spending thing as well as political instability in Europe, Democratic Party implosion. And next week, of course, we have in Europe this Italian vote coming up on December 4th, you know, this reform, political reform vote, which is really about the business elites in Italy giving themselves more power to push through labor market changes, labor market reform, tax cuts, and so forth. It's really for the elites, you see, and the people know that in Italy. They kind of sense this. And this is the third iteration of this working class rebellion, fundamental thing going on. You know, Brexit was the first thing in the UK, and now Trump election. And now the next one on this December 4th is the Italian vote. And of course, in the background of all that is the Italian banks, $400 or $500 billion non-performing loans. and that will be followed very quickly by the European Central Bank meeting on December 8th to decide which way it's going. And Europe's in trouble. I don't care what the short-term boost is in economic indicators, stock or real here, you know, whether it's in the U.S. or over in Europe. That's going to dissipate. That's just short-term euphoria. That's going to dissipate in 2017. And the ECB, European Central Bank, you know, has this even greater battle going on between will Europe do some infrastructure spending, you know, or will it continue to rely on monetary policy through its central bank, which has been bankrupt here. But whichever way the ECB goes, it's pretty clear Europe's in trouble because we're getting an increasing spread between bond rates in Europe versus bond rates in the U.S. and even on stocks. U.S. stocks are rising faster than there over in Europe. And what that means is money capital is flowing out of Europe. Just as it's flowing out of emerging markets, you see, because as the dollar rises, and I talked about that last week, and I'm going to go over that again, as the dollar rises and interest rates rise, oil prices depress, and emerging markets, their currencies collapse. When their currencies collapse, you get capital flight out of those countries, which exacerbates their recessions and raises their inflation at the same time. Stagflation, in other words, and emerging markets are in deep trouble. And it's pushing as well, forcing the Chinese currency, the yuan, below its band. It's really at the low end, and it's stretching. And it's inevitable if we see infrastructure spending and rising U.S. rates by the Fed, short-term rates by the Fed, that we're going to see a devaluation of the Chinese currency. And if that happens, then we get capital flight out of China. At the same time, China's trying to control its third property bubble, and the consequences of that are going to be interesting. So, you know, in 2017, we'll probably relook at the China bubbles. Anyway, those are the things that are coming. You know, democratic implosion, political instability in Europe, immediately here, the Italian vote and ECB decisions, and then a deeper look at it, infrastructure spending and China bubbles. Okay. But back to this trade thing that I didn't finish last week. What we're going to see are these, as I said, highly visible individual publicity stunts here, and you know, company by company, plant by plant here, as quote the trade policy, the true trade policy is going to be delayed, and probably won't see it in the first year, certainly in the first 6 months or first 100 days when a lot of this stuff gets passed. But once we see it, and we may even see some of bilateral free trade deals. You see, Trump, listen close, Trump is not opposed to free trade, folks. Trump is opposed to multilateral free trade agreements, but he will negotiate bilateral, country-to-country agreements. That's what's coming. And you can't have free trade without impacts on jobs and wages. It just doesn't happen. He will renegotiate or negotiate, and it will look like, oh, we're making it tougher and better for the U.S. But he's going to have to really focus on Korea and Japan and keep them within the U.S. fold, because now China is having greater influence on trade in Asia. So I predict, and Australia as well, I predict he's going to, under the claim that he's negotiating better deals for the U.S., you know, he's going to give more concessions to the Japanese, Koreans, and Australians and others, other key economies over there. Okay. On foreign policy in these places, what's he doing? He's inviting the right-wingers in other places in the world to talk with him, just as, you know, Putin, Orban, the president over there of Hungary, who's kind of an independent right-winger, he's invited him. He had this guy, Farage, or whatever his name is, who led the right-wing anti-trade UKIP party in the UK, you know, even suggested the UK should appoint him as ambassador to the US, which really pissed the Brits off, right? How dare you tell us, you know, this great imperial country, United Kingdom, who we can appoint as ambassador, you know? At least that's the fiction. The Brits still think they're imperial. Anyway, they're just a junior partner. The special relationship means they get to be echo to the U.S. Okay, so to sum up, the trade policies are going to be visibility, PR cases, and it's going to be renegotiate bilateral deals and put off major changes in trade. And that includes NAFTA. There's not going to be a big change in NAFTA initially. All right. Trump is going to rule, whatever, from two positions, I believe. I believe that he is going to be very traditional Republican on economic issues. And we'll talk about his appointments, which are beginning to show that. And he will keep his he will placate the Republican establishment by giving them what they want on the money issues, like taxes and so forth. And he'll placate his right-wing radicals, his base, by playing hardball on the non-economic issues. What are they? Well, obviously it's immigration, right? Forget the DREAM Act. That's going away. any students or non-documented, undocumented, or even green card holders in the U.S. who leave the U.S. won't be allowed to come back in. Even now, the colleges and universities are forewarning, like in the University of California here, forewarning students who are under the who are here undocumented non-citizens going to college under the DREAM Act, don't leave the country because you won't be let back in. And I think that's the case. So, tough immigration. He's not going to deport 11 million people. No way. But he may focus on what he claims are 2-3 million deportees who have, quote, criminal records, you know. Well, that number 2-3 million, first of all, is not people with criminal records necessarily. And it's people who have misdemeanors, you know, like driving infractions, right? Get a traffic ticket, get deported. So he'll focus on that. Can he deport 2-3 million? Yes, he can. Obama is deporting hundreds of thousands, 300,000-400,000 a year. So, you know, he could very easily have a 10-year program, announce a 10-year program where he's going to deport 300,000-400,000 of these people a year. And he'll get big publicity for that. And he can tie his wall, building his wall, into his infrastructure spending bill. And the Democrats will vote for it because they're desperate for fiscal spending, which Obama did not do, right, under Obama. So immigration will be a main focus. And, you know, one of the bigger problems is all the detritus, social detritus, that all this anti-immigration talk releases, unleashes, I guess, is the better word. You know, all the political scumbags out there come out and think they've got a free hand now to go after immigrants in all way, shape, and form. Right? So we'll see, you know, KKK and Nazis and similar, less ugly, but no less disturbing elements in U.S. society will come out. Immigration, that's where he's going to go. Well, that's no big revelation. Everyone knows that, right? Law and order, police, repression of ethnic communities. You're going to see much more of that. You're already seeing it with environmental protests, Native Americans up there, Standing Rock, and so forth. So we will see more law and order, and that's how he's going to appeal to his right-wing base as well, immigration. Environment, you know, we're going to see a lot more in terms of environmental. By the way, the infrastructure spending could very well mean a lot more pipelines and stuff like that, and fracking and so forth. That could be all of the infrastructure bill, right? But it will be, you know, environmental, anti-environmental. ACA, Obamacare, right? That will be a fourth element of placating his radical wings. Repeal. Well, he's not going to repeal ACA. He already said he wasn't. What he's really going to go after is he's going to go after two things. One, gutting Medicaid. You know, about the only thing good about ACA was that Medicaid bill provisions, where millions, 10 million people who had no coverage at all, working poor, were able to get on Medicaid. Excuse me, I'm still recovering here. So watch Medicaid, tack on Medicaid, and watch the attempt to turn Medicare into a voucher program. What's that? Oh, that's where they're going to say, okay, the government's got to pay only so much per kinds of service that you need, medical service, and we're going to give you a voucher to buy so much, and you can go buy it through the regular Part B Medicare coverage, or you can go get a private insurance, you know, Medicare Advantage, they call those, to provide you the same with a few little additions that they can do. You know, the private Medicare Advantage, you know, they give you a little bit of a, give you an annual vision, pay part of your eye exam or something like that, right? Wellness programs that regular Medicare does not provide, right? In other words, privatize it. Privatize Part B, Medicare physicians coverage, by giving you a voucher, so much. Oh, well, I can only spend so much, and I can get a little bell and whistle over here with Medicare private insurance, so I'll go there, right? And that's how they're going to gut Medicare. And at some point, we're going to have raising Social Security retirement to 67 and probably the early retirement to 65. But that's a harder nut to crack, you know. First, they're going to go after Medicaid because all states did not implement the Medicaid under the Obamacare. The Republican states, many of them didn't. So they have a momentum there already. And then they're going to go after Medicare Part B. And as I said, try to turn it into a voucher program. This is all Paul Ryan stuff, you see. That's part of quid pro quo, getting healing the rift between the Trumps and the Republican establishment, which is Paul Ryan. So that's what they're going to do with ACA for sure. Well, Medicaid, and Medicare is not part of ACA. What they do with ACA is chip it apart. As I said last week, what you're really going to see with ACA is the mandatory, you have to sign up or pay a fee. That's going to be gone. And if that's gone, then the whole thing financially collapses. We're also going to see, in this placating his base, privatization of an education system is going to take a big leap, and that's, of course, school charters and vouchers. See, the whole thing about vouchers is they give you so much money, and then they don't give you any more year after year, and the prices for these things keep rising, but you have to keep putting in more and more of your own money on top of the vouchers, you see. They freeze their contribution and let the prices rise, and you pay the difference. That's what vouchers are about, whether it's in education or whether it's in the medical side. That's what it's about. That's what vouchers are about. Okay, so to sum up, we're going to see law and order, police repression, more SWAT teams at peaceful protests and demonstrations, intimidation, in other words, changes in immigration, and anti-environment, tax on environmental policies, and gutting of medical, privatization of medical, privatization of education. And that will appeal to his base, you see, along with, I had Ford Motor to retreat or Carrier. to retreat on moving jobs to Mexico, thing, and then they'll quietly, under the aegis of saying, "Oh, we're going to change these free trade agreements. We're going to renegotiate them, you know, one by one." They'll give even more concessions, you know? And then he's rolling the dice and hoping infrastructure will create enough jobs so that the destruction of jobs that we see through these bilateral trade agreements and these tax cuts, because the tax cuts are really going to gut jobs. They're going to give an incentive, further incentive, for businesses to displace labor with capital equipment. By the way, one of them, you know, just as damaging as free trade has been on the destruction of jobs, so has tax cuts. These $10 trillion tax cuts under Bush and Obama, right, have destroyed as much jobs because you give them a tax cut as an incentive for reducing jobs and replacing them with capital. 7 million jobs in manufacturing have been lost since Bush as a result of that. Okay. So that's what's going to go on the placate his troops and placate the Republican elite, the business elite with tax cuts and this bilateral free trade instead of multilateral free trade. By the way, in all this talk, free trade ties in with the immigration issue, you know. While he's going to deport a lot of unskilled, semi-skilled, he's probably going to, as part of this immigration bill, if he doesn't, the Republicans will introduce even more H-1B, O-1 visa quotas, meaning tech companies and be able to bring in even more Asians and Indians and Chinese to take our high-paid tech jobs, you see, 500,000 already. That'll grow. That's what, you know, tech companies wanted that for a long time. And now they're going to get it. In other words, jobs that Americans really want in high-tech, high-paid will continue going to foreigners while we deport people who are picking our vegetables and watching our kids, right, the nannies, and staffing the restaurants and cleaning hotel rooms, etc., and slaughtering our chickens, you know, which are, no one wants those jobs. But we're going to deport those folks, see. By the way, you know, people aren't aware of it, that the undocumented immigrants from Mexico have declined. In other words, they've gone back. 1 million have gone back in the last 2 years. So it's already economically happened. A lot of those, of course, were thanks to Mr. Obama deporting people, breaking up their families. But it's sort of a hypocritical immigration policy, right? Let the Asians in, take high-paid jobs while we kick the Latin Americans out who were doing the low-paid jobs that people don't want. But you won't hear much about that, right? But that's the trade policy, you see, and its connection to the immigration policy as well. So taxes and trade benefiting the rich, right? And also, I should add, in that benefiting the rich, our banker friends, right, deregulation. So trade, tax cuts, deregulation, that is the going to be the Trump concessions to the Republican elite establishment business corporations, you see, and to his more populist, quote, right-wing populist, the supporters, immigration, which would be contradictory, right? Law and order, police, more police repression, anti-environment, ACA, Medicare, Medicaid, and education privatization. He's going to rule from both of those directions, right? Throw the non-economic stuff. Well, you know what this means? This means we have a new form of neoliberalism taking shape. You know, neoliberalism starts in the late 70s, early 80s, under Reagan. Actually, a lot of the proposals were pioneered under Jimmy Carter, first implemented under Reagan. And it's been the case ever since, neoliberalism. Well, neoliberal policies collapsed in 2007-9 with the Great Recession. And Obama hasn't been able to put them back together again very well, but now Trump is. Neoliberalism 2.0 coming. In other words, a continuation, in some sense, an acceleration of the economic programs that result in a shift of income massively to the rich that will continue. But in order to pull it off, more repressive and reactionary social programs, immigration, law and order, anti-environment, health, education, welfare stuff, right? So we're moving to a higher plane of neoliberalism here, about to take shape, And that's the essence. That's one of the essences of the Trump win, you know, a new phase of neoliberalism, including manipulation of populism on the right, when the populism on the left has failed and run its course. Now you flip it over, and you've got a right-wing populism. Okay. To pull this off, they have to tame Trump. And they're doing a good job so far in taming him. Well, what does taming Trump means? That means de-emphasizing his right-wing populism on economic issues and emphasizing his reactionary right-wing populism on social issues. But taming Trump, right, is really about making sure that he appoints the right people to these various positions that will carry out the traditional Republican establishment, right? Another area that we haven't talked about as much is foreign policy. You know, how are they going to tame him on the foreign policy, not just, you know, taxes, trade, and deregulation? And you can see images of this beginning to appear in his appointments, you see. That's the first way the elites ensure that whoever is in that office is their man, right? They influence the appointments. Well, we saw that very clearly in 2008 with Obama. You know, immediately appointed a lot of bankers and banker friends, big corporations. You know, he let Jeff Immelt of General Electric run his trade and job policies. Okay, so what do we see in his appointments so far? Well, first of all, the big three appointments are Secretary of State, Secretary of Treasury, and Secretary of Defense. And those haven't been made yet, which means they're big infighting continuing between his right-wing loyalists, his Trumps, and the Republican establishment going on. What will those appointments be? Well, if you see very pro-establishment appointments, which I predict, what that's going to signal is that, okay, you know, these traditional Republican policies on economic issues or, you know, taxes, trade, regulation are going to continue forward. They will have tamed him. What are the other appointments that haven't been made or have been made, and about to be made? Well, you know, just this past week, he appointed Nikki Haley, Governor of North Carolina, as his UN ambassador. His foreign policy is not really clarified yet where he's going, but the appointments will tell you something. Okay, so she's sort of was anti-Trump for a long time and switched in the middle of the campaign, you see, when she saw him winning. But she, Haley, you know, she's tied in with the Republican establishment, with the Bushes and so forth. Right? Betsy DeVos got appointed this past week to Education Secretary. Well, who is she? Well, her family owns Amway Corporation, right? You're going to see a real crackdown on unions and education and a, quote, privatization of education, vouchers, and charter schools. And, pro-corporate. Betsy DeVos, you know, Republican establishment. They like that. Okay, we saw Jeff Sessions for Justice, you know, a real right-wing dinosaur here. And that's a signal that, okay, law and order. We're going to crack down law and order, protesters, and all that stuff. And by the way, you know, law and order and the social side means a crackdown on pressure on the media. A big battle is going to, a running battle is going to continue between what was called the liberal media and Donald Trump. You know, he called the media together here last week on the agreement that it would be off the record. So they haven't reported what the results of that meeting was, but apparently he really went after them and berated the media. So, you know, that appeals to his base, the social attack, social issues. That's part of his immigration, law and order, environment, ACA, education, a right-wing offensive, offensive against the media, too. He's going to talk against the media here. And, it sounds like Trump. You're looking at all his reporters, you know, supporters are going to say, sounds like Trump. Oh, you know, he's going after immigration. He says he's still going to build the wall and infrastructure spending and et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, he's still our boy. But when it comes to trade, jobs, taxes, regulation, he's not their boy anymore. Okay, so Sessions is a sop to the right wing. Flynn, General Flynn, is a national security advisor. Well, that shows he's got a penchant for putting generals in charge. And he's not the last one we're going to see appointed. All right, who's pending here? What positions are pending? Well, Wilbur Ross, a billionaire, private equity fund, financier, is going to run Commerce. By the way, this is the guy who benefited big time from offshoring and dismantling of the industrial base in the U.S., you know. Buy up these companies and split them up and make money. That's Wilbur Ross. That's what private equity firms do, right? Okay, Steve Bannon, of course, is the sinecure post given to his right wing. But Commerce, that's establishment. Sessions, right wing. DeVos, establishment. No education. How about energy? Who's going to be appointee of energy? Well, it looks like this guy, Harold Hamm of Hamm Oil of Oklahoma. Yeah, put the fox in charge of the hen house here on energy policy. What about interior? Well, front runner is this guy, Forrest Lucas from Lucas Oil. Oil companies are going to love this guy. Maybe even Sarah Palin, but God, I don't know. That would be such a stupid appointment. She couldn't do anything except spout off. I don't think he'll appoint Palin. I could be wrong. That would appeal to his base, right? His radical base. Of course, if he appoints Forrest Lucas, well, that appeals to his Republican establishment base. How about EPA? Front runner is Robert Grady, a venture capitalist. In other words, appeal to Republican establishment, right? We have no idea who the labor is yet. There's no indication. Labor secretary, right? And health and human resources. You know, some talk about Carson, but we'll see with that dodo. I mean, Carson is, on the electoral side, the equivalent of Clarence Thomas in the Supreme Court. Real dodo. Anyway, you can look at these appointments and say, okay, something's coming here, right? Is it coming Republican establishment or coming right wing, right? But the big ones are going to be State Department, and there's a big battle going on between Romney appointee establishment or that blowhard Giuliani, right, who has enriched himself the same way Hillary Clinton did, going around giving $100,000 speeches. You know, he gives about, last 15 years, every month he's gone somewhere and given a speech for a couple $100,000. He's enriched himself tremendously. And then he criticizes Hillary for doing the same thing, exactly the same thing, you know. I don't know that it'll be Giuliani. If Giuliani, then that's a drift to the right. It may even be another general, General Kelly here. Treasury. Well, Trump is really courting Jamie Dimon, of J.P. Morgan Chase aggressively. He'd love to have Diamond in there, but there's this shadow banker here, Mnuchin, who could also get it. So it's a question of whether the mainstream commercial banks, who he really wants, or the shadow bankers get the appointment. Defense Department, some general, I predict, you know, either this general, you know, this John Kelly, or General James Mattis, Marine Corps, or this David Petraeus. Again, showing a lot of generals here going to be in his his cabinet. But you can already see Trump retreating on a number of issues, you know. Whereas he had this meeting last week with the press corps and pretty much berated them off the record, the only reason he would meet. He eventually met with New York Times, who wouldn't go off the record. And in that, Trump softens his positions on a number of issues. Right? He backed off jailing Hillary. Prosecuting Hillary. Maybe that's why Hillary isn't demanding a vote count in certain states, right? maybe there's a quid pro quo there, right? He said he would not pull out of the Paris Accords, because you see the Paris Accords have a lot to do with investments. It's not just climate change and so forth. He's backed off of, outright appeal of the Obamacare, Affordable Care Act. Mm-hmm. So in that interview, people should go read it. He's given a number of signals. Okay, you know, I'll play ball on these big issues that all you rich folks are really consider important. And part of neoliberalism will continue that. How else are they going to tame Trump? How else can they assure, other than influencing these appointments, how else, if he goes too far afield with his right-wing base, what issues? And remember, the media and the press is still poised to go after him. There still are strong elements and advocates that... he has to be dealt with. Well, all right, so other than ensuring appointments, how else might they go after him to get him to cool it on some of his more aggressive issues? Well, let me give you six ways that they could and would and will, if necessary, go after him. One, they will publicize his business conflicts of interest. You know, he has 111 companies in 18 countries. And he's not putting it in some kind of blind trust. I don't think he could. And, well, he could turn it over to his kids, but his kids, Donald Trump Jr. and Ivanka, appear to be very much involved in his administration. So that's not much of a blind trust, is it? Well, first of all, they can't put it. It's too far field, too complex to put it in a blind trust. But if the press want to go after him, they will just start publicizing his conflicts of interest. Then it'll make it look like he's making money off of being president. And that won't, that'll have an eventual impact on him. Right? Another way they could go after him is to go after the Trump Foundation. You see, these foundations are really corrupt, all of them are the rich, not just Hillary's, but his as well. They're slush funds, a way of avoiding taxes and paying themselves money and moving money around quietly in the background, okay, between themselves and foreigners and so forth. You know, all the criticisms of Hillary's foundation were true. Well, no less true for Trump. In fact, probably even wheeler dealer, even more so, right? His tax returns, they can start undercovering his tax returns, which he has refused to show because a lot of shady stuff there. Right? Nepotism. You know, every time his son-in-law and his son Ivanka show up somewhere and they're not supposed to, they'll publicize it and big inferences that you know, there's nepotism and corruption as a result. So they're going to go after the family and tie it to him. Or they could, right? Executive violations of law, you know. Maybe he undoes something, steps over, you know, the same stuff that they claim that Obama was doing, you know, and just exercising the rights of the executive branch, the executive orders and stuff, you know, that could raise innuendos and insinuations and so forth. He's violating law. Well, president breaking law, that's, you know, impeachment. Right? and they can do the same not only with his family members, but with his appointments. You know, these generals shoot off their mouth, make it look like they're conceding to Putin or something, you know. He gets tarred with that as well, guilt by association, right? So all these kind of attacks, they can go after him. You know, New York Times, Washington Post, mainstream TV, CBS, and so forth, MSNBC, all those are poised to do these things. Publicize conflicts of interest, right, with his business, go after his foundation, lay the charge of nepotism, go after his tax returns, suggest that he's violating law, and guilt by association attacking his cabinet members for excesses. And these, you know, these generals running this thing, you know, these various departments, they're not as politically adept. They're going to step into doo-doo at some point. Okay. So those are the ways we're going to see him go after him, right? And watch it very close. See if he plays ball, especially on the traditional neoliberal economic issues, which I predict he will. And he'll give himself left cover by going after the social issues, and the Republican elites don't care that much about that. That's how they will tame Trump. And there's already evidence it's already occurring. Okay, next week we're going to look at what's going on with the Italian vote and what that means for political instability in Europe and the central bank over there and the U.S. Federal Reserve decision to raise rates coming up. Okay, Alternative Visions, Jack Rasmus.